Welcome back, Deep Divers. Ready for another fascinating plunge into the world of science?
Always ready to explore.
Today, we're going microscopic, diving deep, deep down into the world of microbes.
And not just any microbes. We're talking about the bustling community thriving in a seemingly ordinary pond in Massachusetts called Cider's Pond.
Cider's Pond. Sounds deceptively peaceful.
Right. But trust me, beneath the surface, there's a whole lot more going on than meets the eye.
What makes Cider's Pond so special? It's not exactly the Amazon rainforest of the microbial world, is it?
You'd be surprised. It's a scientific marvel, actually. It's what we call meromictic.
Meromictic. Okay, you're using big words now. You know I'm not a scientist.
Sorry, sometimes I get carried away. Meromictic just means that the water layers in the pond, they don't mix completely.
Oh, I see. So it's like a layered cake.
Yeah.
Or maybe one of those fancy cocktails with different colored liquids.
Exactly. But instead of tequila and grenadine, you've got layers of fresh water on top and saltier water down below. And this creates this incredibly stable environment where a whole bunch of different microbial life can set up shop.
A microbial metropolis. So we're not just talking about a few lonely bacteria floating around.
Oh, absolutely not. We're talking a complex web of interconnected organisms all interacting with each other and their environment.
And the research paper we're diving into today, it takes a unique approach to understanding this microscopic community.
Right. They're not just looking at individual species competing for resources.
They're looking at the entire ecosystem as a network, like how everything is connected.
Exactly. Like a city's businesses, right?
Yeah.
They all have their specialties, but they rely on each other's energy and output to keep the whole system running.
I like that analogy. So instead of getting bogged down in identifying every single microbe, they asked a bigger question.
How is this whole system functioning together? How is it making the most of the available energy?
Which brings us to the fascinating and maybe slightly intimidating world of maximum entropy production.
Or MEP, as we like to call it in the biz.
MEP. Sounds a bit like a complicated physics equation.
Not at all. Think of it this way. Nature hates to waste a good energy source.
Makes sense. Energy is precious.
Right. So in any system, things will naturally tend to organize themselves in a way that uses up that available energy as efficiently as possible.
So if there's a delicious energy buffet just sitting there,
some enterprising microbe is going to find a way to eat their fill.
Survival of the fittest, even on a microscopic level.
Exactly. And the more efficient they are at using that energy, the better they'll thrive.
It's all about maximizing their energy ROI. So how do the researchers actually test this whole MEP idea out in Cider's Pond?
Well, they couldn't exactly hand out tiny energy drinks to the microbes.
Too bad. That would have been fun to see.
Right. But instead, they turned to the power of computer modeling. They created a simulation of the pond's ecosystem.
So like a sim city for microbes.
Exactly. But instead of building parks and zoning regulations, they're looking at how energy flows through the system.
And how do they factor in all the complexities of a real ecosystem? I mean, there are tons of different microbial species in Cider's Pond, right?
That's the beauty of their approach. Instead of trying to track every single species, they focused on the overall energy flow.
So less is more.
In a way, yes. By simplifying the model, they needed far fewer parameters. They could see the forest for the trees, or I guess in this case, the energy flow for the microbes.
I like it. Elegant and efficient. So they built this model, set their virtual microbes loose, and then what?
They let the simulation run its course.
Did it work? Did the virtual microbes throw a party once they achieved maximum entropy?
Well, I haven't received my virtual invitation yet.
Me neither. That's disappointing.
But in all seriousness, what they did was compare their model's predictions to real-life measurements taken from Cider's Pond. They wanted to see if their virtual world matched up with reality.
A reality check for the digital microbes. So, did the model pass the test?
That's where things start to get really interesting. So remember, we talked about how the researchers ran two different simulations.
Right. One focused on short-term energy gains and the other on the long game.
Exactly. And to really put their model to the test, they designed these simulations to see how the microbial community in Cider's Pond might change its behavior over different timescales.
So not just a snapshot in time. But a whole movie of microbial activity.
Exactly. They were curious if their model could predict the ebb and flow of microbial life, so to speak.
Because in nature, things are rarely static, right?
Yeah.
It's all about adapting to changing conditions.
Precisely. So to capture this dynamic aspect, they ran two main simulations. One was set to optimize. Remember, that means maximizing energy use over a short time scale, about 6 hours.
Got it. So like a quick burst of energy.
Exactly. That was our short time scale simulation, or SIO for short.
SIO, got it. And what about the long game?
For the long haul, they had the LIO simulation, aiming for maximum energy use over 3 days.
Okay, so we've got the sprinters and the marathon runners of the microbial world. The SIO is living for the moment, and the LIO is playing the long game.
A perfect analogy. Now, what's really interesting is how these different strategies played out in the model, especially when you consider where these microbes were hanging out in our simulated CIDRS pond.
Okay, I'm all ears. Tell me more.
Well, it turns out that location is everything, even in the microbial world.
Microbial real estate. Who knew?
Right. So picture this. The SIO microbes, those focused on those short-term energy gains, they actually ended up congregating in the deeper parts of the pond, away from all that sunlight.
Really? I would thought the surface would be prime real estate for energy-hungry microbes, all that sunlight just begging to be soaked up.
You'd think so, right?
Less competition for resources, plenty of space to spread out.
You'd think that. But remember, light degrades quickly as you go deeper in water.
Right, right. Less sunlight for those surface-dwelling sunbathers as you go deeper.
And that's where the SIO microbes found their edge. See, in the deeper water, where light is less abundant, those quick energy strategies, they actually made a lot of sense.
Fascinating. So they found their niche, thriving in the shadows, while the LIO microbes bask in the sun up top.
Exactly. They'd adapted to grabbing those quick bursts of energy from things like sulfur compounds. They weren't as reliant on that slow and steady sunlight that the LIO microbes needed.
Talk about resourcefulness. But this brings up an interesting point. If the SIO microbes are hanging out in the depths, does that mean less predation pressure on them?
You're thinking out of sight, out of mind.
Exactly. If the predators can't see them, they can't eat them.
Right. It's a good hypothesis. But in reality, it's a bit more nuanced than that. You see, the models show that the SIO microbes, with their boom and bust lifestyle, they actually experienced much higher levels of predation than the LIO microbes.
Wait, really? Even though they were tucked away in the depths?
Yep. Remember how we talked about those SIO microbes being like fast food restaurants?
Right. Quick and easy energy.
Exactly. Well, just like fast food joints tend to attract a lot of hungry customers, those SIO microbes, with all their rapid growth, they were like ringing the dinner bell for predators.
So even though they had a good strategy for their niche, they were still more likely to become lunch.
It's all about the trade-offs. The LIO microbes, on the other hand, were more like those slow-cooked farm-to-table restaurants.
They take a little longer, but they offer a more, shall we say, refined dining experience.
Exactly. And a less risky one at that. See, their slow and steady approach might not seem as exciting, but it led to a much more stable community with less predation pressure.
So it sounds like there's more to understanding this microbial community than just who uses the most energy. It's about how they use it and how that energy use plays into the larger ecosystem.
You're getting right to the heart of it. This study suggests that maximizing entropy production, at least in a system like CIDRS pond, isn't a winner-take-all game.
It's more nuanced than that.
Much more. It's about finding the right strategy for the right place and the right time.
So much for simple ponds, Rate. We've uncovered some pretty profound stuff here.
We really have. And I think one of the biggest takeaways, at least for me, is how this research challenges us to think differently about ecosystems.
It's not just about the individual players. It's about the energy flowing between them.
Exactly. For decades, ecology was all about competition. Who eats whom? Survival of the fittest.
Right, the classic food chain.
Exactly. And while those things are still important, this research on maximum entropy production suggests that to truly understand how ecosystems function, we need to follow the energy.
So instead of just looking at who's eating whom, we need to look at how energy is being exchanged, transformed, and ultimately dissipated throughout the entire system. It's like, instead of just looking at the individual parts of a machine, we're trying to understand the flow of energy that makes the whole thing run.
A perfect analogy. And what's so exciting about this whole MEP approach is that it has the potential to revolutionize how we model and manage ecosystems, especially as our planet undergoes rapid change.
Okay, now you're talking. We've got to talk about the real-world implications of this.
Imagine being able to predict how a coral reef will respond to warming ocean temperatures, or how a forest ecosystem will be affected by drought.
That would be game-changing.
Right. By understanding the underlying energy dynamics of these systems, we could potentially develop much more accurate and predictive models.
So instead of just reacting to environmental problems after they happen, we could anticipate them, maybe even prevent them.
Exactly. It's about moving from a reactive to a proactive approach to conservation and environmental management. And you know what? This whole MEP thing, it's not just limited to microbes and ecosystems.
Oh, I'm intrigued. Tell me more.
Think about how this applies to your own life. You probably make different decisions depending on your immediate needs versus your long-term goals, right?
Sure, we've all been there. Sometimes you just need that extra shot of espresso to power through the day, even if it means you'll crash later.
Exactly. It's that short-term energy grab. Well, the microbes in Cider's Pond, they're doing the same thing with their energy. Those SIO microbes, they're all about those quick bursts, even if it means they're more likely to become someone else's lunch.
And the LIO microbes, they're the ones playing the long game, thinking about sustainability and balance.
Exactly. They're showing us that sometimes slow and steady wins the race. So if there's one thing you take away from today's deep dive, I hope it's this. The next time you're faced with a decision, big or small, think about your own personal energy flow.
Are we going for a quick fix, or are we in it for the long haul?
Precisely. Because whether you're a microbe in a pond or a human on a planet, energy is the driving force of life. And the more we understand how it works, the better equipped we'll be to navigate the challenges ahead.
Well said. And on that note, we've reached the end of our deep dive into the fascinating world of Cider's Pond. Big thanks to our expert for taking us on this incredible journey.
The pleasure was all mine.
And to our listeners, thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We'll keep bringing you those mind-expanding discoveries and insightful conversations. Until next time, stay curious.